Coming up on All About Android, we discuss the finishing move by the U.S. to Huawei. Also, is the Moto Razr even a real phone? Will we ever know? New Google Glass. There's the Asus Zenfone 6, Minecraft Earth, Tor browser for Android, your email, and a whole lot more. All About Android is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Grammarly. Grammarly is a communication tool that helps people improve their writing to be mistake-free, clear, and effective. Start writing confidently by going to grammarly.com/android and get 20% off a Grammarly premium account today. And by WordPress, turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at WordPress.com. You can get 15% off any new plan by visiting WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. And by the IntraZone podcast from Microsoft, your bi-weekly conversation and interview podcast about SharePoint, OneDrive, and related tech within Microsoft 365. Get highlights on usage, adoption, and how SharePoint works for you. Subscribe on your favorite podcatcher today. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 421, recorded on Tuesday, May 21st. Oh, I like that. 2019, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
So,
did you say Tuesday or Thursday?
Tuesday, I think.
Oh, okay. But I think I was hoping it was Thursday. Anyway. Yeah. Hello, Jason.
Hi, how's it going, Ron? Flo's not here today.
Flo's taking the day off. She's getting started on the Memorial Day weekend early.
Oh, yeah. She's just partying. Yeah, that's basically what she's doing. leaving us to work while she parties. No, she needs some time, and she's earned that. She's a busy lady, so we're happy that she can take that time. Joining us, not one, but two guests today. We have Michael Fisher. You probably know him as the Mr. Mobile. How's it going, Michael?
Very well, Jason. Thank you for having me. I wish I was on your coast, but I'm on mine.
Yeah.
We should probably let everyone know that when you refer to the Mr. Mobile, you should be capitalizing those M's.
Oh man, I knew it wasn't going to escape.
It's right there in the lower
but
third.
But not the T.
It's right there on your screen. How could you get it wrong? Really?
So when I emphasized the Mr. Mobile, I was probably putting the emphasis in the wrong part of
that. Yes, there it is.
Right. Yeah. Could consult the style guide, and it'll tell you everything you need to know. Yeah.
It's good to have you here, Michael. Also joining us, Stephen Zimmerman from XDA Developers. Stephen, how you doing, man?
Good, yourself?
Doing awesome. It's great to get you here. You actually wrote a story that relates to our top story that totally has nothing to do with Huawei. Why would we talk about Huawei this week? There's no reason to talk about Huawei this week. And we're just delighted to get you back on the show. It's been a little while, so thank you for hopping on today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Good to have you here. Before we start anything, I thought I'd throw this in at the beginning because I know, Michael, you had mentioned an email that if we just happened to talk about the Pixel 3a, you'd be all about it because you're really enjoying it. And I got to say, I agree, but I'm curious to hear your take.
You know, it's funny. I'm a little sad because I just realized right before we went on air that I have ruined the headline I was going to go with for my review. So the bright side is I'm free to talk about it. This is the first $400 phone I've ever used that I wouldn't mind just using until its replacement arrives in another year. But that is not true. The first time that happened was with the Moto X Pure Edition in 2015. So this is the first phone in, three or four years that I've come across that costs $399 that doesn't annoy me in any significant way, save one.
Do we have to tune in to find out?
I should do it. Like, no. The video I'm cutting right now is about wireless charging. And of course, the 3A does not have wireless charging. So all of the 17 wireless charging pads I have in my house are useless in studio.
Here's the thing about that. I will argue that that's a bit of a luxury, sir, because I have no wireless charging pads. And I would argue that most of America does not have wireless charging pads.
I don't. If we were in a pre-iPhone 10 world, I would be a lot more likely to go with you on it. But I feel like opened it up a little bit. I think people are starting to get it. Plus, at Starbucks, you know, you sit down, you hear the little chimes around you as people discover those pads on the table and they put their phones in. You're like, oh. oh, lovely. This is becoming a thing that normal people care about.
Whoa.
But aside from that, I think the Pixel 3a is a game changer.
Well, it's good that you say that, because I actually have a friend of mine who's what's the best way to say that? He is Android curious. He's a iOS user who keeps flirting with Android. Like every now and then he gets a phone and then goes back to the iPhone or whatever. And I was just, he was just asking me, he's like, tell me why I shouldn't get the 3A. And I was like, dude, right. I have no reason why you shouldn't get the 3A. I'm like, you should get the 3A. You're on Verizon. You know, it's the right price point. It's a good handset. Go for it.
And so
I'm pushing him to hopefully finally have him make the jump and stay on the Android side of the fence.
It's like overnight it became the go-to recommendation for a lot of people. It's like, oh, you wanted to check out Android or you need a new smartphone and you're on a sort of a budget? Like, here, I have a new recommendation for you that I have almost no problem with at all. And I haven't been able to find a new problem in the past 2 weeks.
I continue to forget that I'm even using the 3A, because both my 3A and the 3XL are, you know, 3A XL and the 3XL are the same size, have the same case. And the only reason I'm bringing the 3XL in, it really is because, you know, because when we do the show and it has Android, you know, Q beta 3 on it or whatever. But I mean, the 3A is what I'm using on a daily basis, and I miss nothing. Like, the wireless charging is probably the one thing that I do miss, because I do have a wireless charging pad by my bed. But it's really, for me, it's not the end of the world. I'm very new to the wireless charging thing, so it's not something that I'm so invested in as it sounds like you are, Michael. Steven, have you played around with the 3A? Do you have any thoughts on this?
So I actually haven't had a chance to get my hands on one yet, but I was seriously considering buying one, which is honestly strange for me. I don't buy many phones. The last phone that I bought outright was a couple years back. I was seriously looking at popping over to the U.S. and buying one. But the problem is, in Canada, it's actually not as cheap as it is in the U.S. In Canada, on the carriers, it goes for about $650, when you can get Pixel 3 for $750. So it's doesn't buy you quite as much in Canada, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, it really is impressive what they've done here. And they've at the same time, it's impressive how they've kind of devalued their premium phones by coming out with this mid-range phone that does pretty much most of what you want it to do and does it really well. So I don't know. Be curious to see what the Pixel 4 is all about. They'll really have to justify that higher price, I think.
Most definitely.
But, okay, so that's our little like pre-show before we get into the news. So now, Victor, it's time for the news.
One thing that usually never annoys me much is Android news.
Oh, good.
But this time, I don't know. I don't know about this week.
What are you annoyed with what's going on with Huawei?
I don't know. It seems like we're all about Huawei today, right?
Oh, yeah. We're a little distracted. It's true. The last 48 hours have been kind of mayhem for tech news and Huawei. And it's a developing story. It's been changing all over the place. So I thought I'd start off with kind of a little bit of a summary, because we just to catch everybody up to speed for the last 48 hours. And actually, it dates back to last week when there was an executive order issued to block U.S. companies like Huawei, who the U.S. says poses a national security risk, from doing business in the U.S. In any way, shape, or form. And that executive order, from my understanding, more has to do with this like historical kind of perspective on Huawei and its networking equipment specifically, not their phones. So for the purposes of this show, yeah, I don't know how much of that involvement is related to the phones. But on Sunday, Google announced it was going to sever Huawei's Android license in compliance with that order. So I don't believe that that's Google being like bad guy Google. That's Google following the law in the U.S. essentially. And that would restrict, in essence, Huawei to AOSP, so they wouldn't be able to, have the Google Play Store on there, no Google services, Google security updates on future Huawei devices. However, existing devices would not be affected by that. And everyone's going, oh my goodness, Huawei is doomed. Like, you know, and meanwhile, they've just had this crazy trajectory, right? They've been selling smartphones, selling handsets like crazy worldwide. Vlad Savov on The Verge said their phone business would be, quote, decimated without Google's Android, which is probably pretty close to accurate as far as that's concerned. On Monday, the U.S. Commerce Department announced a 90-day license for U.S. companies to continue work with Huawei, possible extension beyond that. I don't think it's a full license free and clear, but it's a partial. And as a result, Google announced that it would once again provide OS updates and security patches to existing Huawei devices during this temporary license period. Still plans to hold its apps and services from future devices. And that, I think, is where we're at right now. But I feel like every hour there's a new post. It's like, oh, no, now what? Steven, you actually wrote about Huawei's use of AOSP being anything but a sure thing. And it relates to copyright. And I think this is a really interesting perspective. So why don't you kind of give your take on why Huawei might not be able to use AOSP going forward?
Yeah, so, I mean, the first reaction that a lot of people seem to have to the announcement about not being able to use Android and Android branding was that they would just use AOSP going forward. But the being on the entity list and being subject to the export regulations, EAR, I can't remember the actual words for it, it blocks any U.S. company from entering into a contract with you to supply parts, including software parts, such as, well, obviously Android, but AOSP as well. AOSP is able to be used because it's offered as under a license, the Apache license, and that license is an agreement that they have to enter into. If they cannot enter into the Apache license agreement, then they can't use AOSP itself, as it would be copyright infringement. Hmm. Now, obviously, Google's not going to pursue that. They have no interest in pursuing that. It would be a huge waste of their time to pursue that. But at the same time, there are criminal penalties for massive copyright infringement, which Huawei would be doing if they were to distribute Android in, worldwide without a license to use it. And those criminal penalties could be pursued by the U.S. government directly without Google's help itself. So there actually is substantial potential for if someone wanted to take it to that level, which hopefully it doesn't go that far, there is substantial potential for Huawei to be pursued for the use of AOSP without a license. But on the upside, there actually is some precedence that it may not go that path, and this whole dispute may end sooner than we expect. Specifically, ZTE. Just 3 years ago, there was a bit of a similar situation happening. Mm-hmm. And the article I published today, actually, I almost published a very similar article 2 years ago, but I didn't get around to writing it. And essentially, yes, they got a 3-month reprieve right now, but 3 years ago, ZTE, when they were blocked, got a 3-month reprieve that was extended for another 3 months for compliance, and then another 3 months, and another 3 months, and another 3 months, until eventually they were taken off the list after paying some substantial fines, and were allowed to do business again, and now are entering Western markets again with full Android devices.
And you're positing that that might actually happen with Huawei too, which it possibly, yeah, it absolutely could. I feel like there's a certain kind of political strength happening right now, a confluence of events between this and, of course, you know, Chinese tariffs that are also related and happening in tandem with this. It's not impossible absolutely that something like that would happen, but man, that feels somewhat impossible, I suppose.
It's a horrifying position to be in. No one wants to be on the entity list. If you're on the entity list and don't get exemptions and don't get taken off, it's pretty much a death sentence to a business. And the Commerce Department understands that. They know that it's a death sentence if you get left on with no provisions. And they readily work with companies to try and prevent that from happening as long as the company tries to comply.
Hmm.
So as long as Huawei – sorry, assuming nothing out of the ordinary happens, I wouldn't be surprised if Huawei – and the Commerce Department kept announcing ongoing agreements to continue to work together until a permanent agreement can be found, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So let's open it up. Obviously, Michael, Ron, I'm very curious to hear what you guys think about this. Michael, where are you at right now?
The ZTE example is a really good one. I was speculating in that vein yesterday. Well, you know, ZTE was essentially destroyed as a company, and they were, you know, were able to come back from that after a series of reversals, as Stephen already went over. I mean, my thing was, I just couldn't get out of my own head in terms for yesterday when I was trying to process this news, in terms of how much Huawei has brought to the mobile space, how much innovation they're responsible for. And innovation, even, I mean, you can't say any words in this discussion without somebody getting inflamed. There's all kinds of patriotic and nationalistic distractions occurring as a result of this being a symptom of a trade war. But if you just look at what Huawei has brought to the space, the mobile space, I mean, in smartphone cameras alone, they've exerted immense pressure on other manufacturers to up their game. The material science, even the color of their devices, reverse wireless charging. You take a look at their MateBook Pro. It's one of the best Windows laptops there is. And that, you know, has an innovative way of talking to smartphones with something as simple as an NFC tag. But it's implemented so well that I made a whole video about it. Like, this is a company that makes impressive stuff. Say what you will about, you know, the company's connections to the Chinese government, itself, these are products the Android ecosystem should not be without. And so I really hope, just for the sake of that ecosystem, that this gets worked out sooner rather than later.
Hmm. Ron, what do you think?
I don't know. This whole thing is just crazy and complicated. But looking at some of the you know, Jason, you made the comment about how things are, you know, it seems like every hour there's a new article or a new story or something like that. And seeing the Huawei CEO post today on WeChat that they're going to roll out their own operating system in 2020 is I think that Huawei's like, they're going to take this on the chin and roll on. And, to Michael's point, I think they're an innovative company. They'll continue to innovate, and they'll figure out a way to innovate around the U.S. if needed and innovate around Android. I think of all the companies that we've seen emerge and stuff like that, I think Huawei is the one that could do that.
Samsung has tried to do their own OS with Tizen, and that just ended up being relegated to, you know, a thing in smaller devices and on your wrist. But I feel like Samsung could have done this, but they weren't able to pull it off.
You see, but Samsung had the right idea at the wrong time. Right? Tizen was how many years now? What is that, 7 years? Right?
More than about 15.
Yeah, 15 years ago. Think about where the devices are now and where the supply chain in China is like and how far we've all come. And you know, basically, could you, you know, you want to roll the specs for a mobile operating system. You don't need to build it from the ground up 15 years ago anymore. You can just reverse engineer Android. You already know what the UI, you already know what basically the ins and outs and how it can work and everything. You just got to do it. Mm. You know, I think that it's a much better environment to roll your own OS now than it was when Samsung was trying to make Tizen work.
Yeah.
So one of the things that was announced actually has me a little worried for Huawei. They announced Android app compatibility, which if they were just targeting APIs a couple years ago would be potentially doable, but with the recent Oracle ruling that ruled that APIs are copyrightable, they could potentially find themselves in trouble with AOSP, even if they're using a completely fresh code base that just happens to be targeting the same APIs. I have no knowledge of what the actual OS looks like. This is purely speculation based on what has been announced so far, but it's got me a little worried.
Yeah, and plus, you know, they've been working on their own OS. Apparently, the internal name on it is Project Z. They've been working on that for years now. The Information had a post where they said that their sources were saying this OS is, quote, far from ready, and I don't know what that is, if that is 2020 or not. But it sounds like it's not ready to go right now, which might be what Huawei actually needs.
But what do you – so if the CEO is saying it's going to be ready in 2020, and if right now it's not ready, it's May – and what is the thing that you would need to get it ready by 2020? Motivation.
Well, that's true.
Right? Good point. But the U.S. government is basically motivating Huawei to speed that up and to throw all their resources at it. And, you know, in 6 months' time, can they do it? I don't know. You know, I guess we'll find out. He didn't say when in 2020.
Right.
He didn't say it was January.
December 31st, 2020.
Yeah.
The beta version.
As appreciative as I am of Huawei's hardware prowess, and I am, I've never been impressed with the company's abilities with software. Certainly, there's some great ideas baked into the versions of Android Huawei has built, but they're seldom executed properly, and it seems to take them a long time to innovate. They do fix stuff, but it seems to take them to iterate, not innovate. So that, combined with the fact that we've, even if they figure out a way to emulate, Android apps or whatever, modify Android apps to run on this Project Z stuff, and they're legally allowed to, we don't have an example in history of a company that succeeded trying to do that. Yeah. You know, BlackBerry tried to do it on BlackBerry 10. Microsoft was in the middle of trying to do it. I think Sailfish does it, but they didn't have a significant market share. So it's like, I don't know. I would be very surprised if they were able to easily innovate around this problem. I think there's no way forward for them without Android.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel, you know, a great man by the name of Walt Disney once said, if you can dream it, you can do it. So, I just think, you know, with the situation, I mean, I can't, if you're telling me that there's no way for any mobile device company to proceed on their own without Android, that's a more scary thought in my mind. You know, and that's what triggers the EU. That's what triggers antitrust and all that sort of stuff. Like that's a bold statement that I hope doesn't exist. Of course, as an Android loyalist, I don't want anything else. I don't want Tizen. I don't want Project Z. But you know, but who knows? We didn't. You know, Android didn't exist. You know, 15 years ago, whatever it was, right? It was, you know, like the innovation comes from the unlikeliest of places.
And sometimes timing is not in your favor. Today was also the unveiling of the Honor 20 and the Honor 20 Pro phones right in the middle of all of this, and by all accounts these are really nice phones. I've heard very little about it today, but you know, hole punch display, nearly bezel-less, dynamic holographic design on the glass back, which Honor is really good at doing stuff like that. Quad cameras on the back, Kirin 980 processor, just really bad timing.
I just love the PR person who's got to handle that.
Oh my goodness! You know? Yeah. Nightmare scenario for whoever's running a PR for Honor right now.
Hey, I've got a pitch for you.
We realize all this stuff's going on right now, but convince them they want it. Come on,
right?
That's your one and only job.
jumping back to the antitrust mention, I think that actually is an important distinction to make.
Yes.
Competing without AOSP, unless you have a background like iOS, where there's development directly on the OS since 2005 and then decades of Unix development before that, you can't go from scratch to a full-blown OS at this point that can compete at the high end. But at the same time, it's a very rare situation where a company would be able to use AOSP, and attempt to compete against Android. As Amazon is trying to do right now in limited markets. Mm-hmm. I don't think someone's going to come out of nowhere and start a new OS in the short term. But what has to be overcome to build an OS and a community is much bigger than just building a community and using the AOSP OS as your base.
Yeah.
It's fair. I mean, it's fair. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you need the support of the developers, and you need, you know, like you can't, you know, let's say that they're going to fast track this OS development and they're going to roll it out. It needs to have apps. It needs to have functionality. It needs to work. You know, like how do you convince, you know, Facebook to roll out a version of WhatsApp to work on Project Z? Right?
I don't know that you can. If there's a true ban, then U.S. companies can't produce for that platform. So that ends up being a really big hurdle, right? I mean, obviously, this is one of those stories that's going to have a long arc to it. Right now, it's just kind of the beginning, the hotline. Well, it's not even the beginning. This has been going on for a decade. Like, literally, this was set in motion a decade ago in a number of different ways, and it's just now reaching this point.
And some of the verbiage on the Huawei side is that almost as if they expected it. They're like, they were waiting for this to happen.
Well, yes, and actually some articles that we, you know, from like even a year ago, Huawei was explicitly saying, yes, we are developing an alternate OS in case things go down where we can't use Android anymore. That's the specific reason why they were developing Project Z to begin with. So they saw this as a potential, and hey, here we are. They're smart, you know. Real quick, before we get to our first ad here, I thought this next story was pretty interesting, Ron. And I know it has your name written all over it.
Yeah, I had to, and I was so excited to see it come up on the rundown because, you know, we are right on the bleeding edge of the foldable revolution. You know, like it's I can feel it. The wind is coming, change is coming upon us. And one of them that we've been waiting for is the rumored Moto Razr. The impossibly thin kind of design that we saw of a foldable Motorola phone using the old Razr brand. Well, Lenovo shared a video at a press event to show off renders of the as yet unannounced folding Moto Razr phone. And we were all shocked to see this. But except the video they showed was actually a fan-made render video. And you could see the clock widget in the video clearly shows a quote-unquote concept by at Waqar Khan HD, the name of the person who did these renders, the Waqarkhnhd. It shows that a couple of times in the video that they showed, and a separate watermark had been cropped out of the video that they showed. And the creator of that render says permission was never requested or granted for them to show that. Which begs the question, why on earth would Lenovo use a fan video of a render to show press what it's working on and pass it off as their own?
I don't understand.
Like,
what
that is
a dirty move.
That's so weird.
It's so weird. Like, even OnePlus wouldn't do that. It's very strange, and this all led a friend of the show, Ron Amadeo, to question whether the Moto Razr even exists at all. As I mentioned, you know, the design docs that we've seen so far from it show it to be impossibly thin, and that Lenovo is too weak compared to Samsung, Huawei, and Apple, and Lenovo has never actually confirmed that the Razr actually exists. So the fact that they're showing a fan-made render to show what they're working on doesn't instill a lot of confidence that a foldable Razr is in our future. Although I really hope this is some sort of weird sleight of hand.
We want to believe. Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
That hopefully somebody can answer. This is not the only leak we've seen, though. We saw that leak a few weeks back in April of the packaging, the supposed packaging, the marketing materials of the retail arrangement of the Moto Razr, the new one. So is that a fake? Two that was on Slash Leaks. Does anybody know if that? I would like to know that, because if that's exposed to be, you know, another fan made thing that just got passed off as a genuine leak, then I think we're in trouble. I do disagree with Ron's position that Lenovo is not enough of an innovator that we could ever believe that something like this could come from them. I mean, I just saw that crazy foldable PC from them, you know, and they've done the yoga book and all this. Lenovo does some crazy cool stuff, so I could see them building this.
How separate is their mold division from their PC division, though? Because I know there used to be a fair amount of separation between the two. Is that still ongoing, or are they more integrated now?
I don't know. They used to make really cool phones at Motorola, and now that, you know, they don't make as many cool phones, but that division makes a lot more money now too. So I think Lenovo's influence there is significant now.
I had missed the press shot here. I can actually.
Yeah, in April, the press renders, I'm looking at it now, but I don't see anything debunking them.
Right.
So, right.
I guess that's the hard thing. I mean, anytime it's like a leaked render, it literally could be anybody, you know, bringing it out, I suppose. But
I mean, it could be. It's a leaked render. I leaked it. So, you know, we never specify who leaks the render.
Yeah,
so
it's true. It's true. I leaked it from my own personal collection, my own abilities. There it is. If you click that image, it'll full size it. There you go.
This is obviously not real because no product packaging would look like that.
But okay, but look at this for a second and look at the device itself and think about a device thin.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of battery is going in there? Like, I don't know. Like,
oh, yeah, man, that thing would last half a day.
From that perspective, it really does kind of seem impossibly thin. Like, I don't know. Is the chin where the battery would be? And if so, is that enough to power a device like that for the entire day? I don't know.
Not necessarily. Remember going back to Huawei, the Mate X, when you open it up, that's a really thin phone. I mean, that seems impossible.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the fold still laid up on the you know, in dry dock getting refitted, and then the Mate X maybe never landing with Android, the Moto Razr is our last hope for a really great 2019 folders. I hope it's real.
I do too. No, I really want it to be real. Don't get me wrong. I really want it to be real. I think it looks really cool. And when it folds all the way out, then you're like, okay, that looks like, you know, it goes from folded, it looks like the old school Razr, unfolded, it looks like a phone. It looks like a today phone with a little fat chin, but we'll forgive it for that.
I just got to say, if it comes with a looks like a plastic coating on the display,
don't touch it.
Run away.
Run away.
This design feels so weird to me, though, because I mean, what are you gaining from this fold? Yes, you're potentially gaining a little bit of protection from scratch when it's closed, but you're also getting less protection from scratch when it's open and adding a ton of mechanical complexity for what benefit here? With the other folding phones, okay, you get a larger screen when you need it and a smaller screen when you don't. Here, I guess you could maybe pack down a little bit smaller.
Yeah, I guess pocket a bit.
Steve, I'll tell you what we're getting with this design. We are returning to the ability to effectively hang up angrily on someone.
Yes.
Right? Which ever since the emergence of the smartphone, you've never been able to go, fine, goodbye. Yes. Right? You know, now I can close that foldable phone and hang up on someone that I'm angry at.
Oh, that was so satisfying to do that.
Absolutely. Should I get one of those headphone jack
receivers?
Yes.
Yeah. Made out of good old fashioned bake light.
Yeah. All right, we'll hold our breath and wait for the Motorola Razr Redux to happen. Who knows? Maybe it will. All right, let's take a break, thank the sponsor, and then we'll get back and talk about more hardware. Apparently, hardware snuck into the main news segment, but, you know, there's a lot of hardware this week. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Grammarly. I love Grammarly. I use it every single day when I'm typing because I just get the recommendations, and it helps me sound better. My writing reads better to whoever receives it. It makes me sound better. Well, let's say a little bit smarter than I am. Grammarly is a communication tool that helps people improve their writing to be mistake-free, clear, and effective. They encourage everyone, even the best students, the top professionals, to use Grammarly to do their best work and accomplish even more of their goals. Because Grammarly is a writing assistant that makes you look and sound smarter. So you can improve yourself and your communication wherever you happen to be communicating, school, work, almost anywhere with Grammarly. They help people show their best self through writing and are available across platforms, including online browser extensions, desktop editor, and mobile keyboard checker. So you can have it running on your phone or running on your desktop or your laptop. Grammarly is available on multiple browsers, so Chrome, Firefox, Safari, Edge, and platforms, iOS, Android, Windows, Mac. So everything that you need, basically. Their free product reviews, critical spelling, and grammar. But it kind of goes a little bit deeper. If you go with Grammarly Premium, it looks out for spelling and grammar, yes, but also advanced punctuation, structure, style within context, vocabulary suggestions, conciseness, readability for different occasions. So how you write for a business proposal versus an academic essay versus casual blog post, all different types. And that allows you to accomplish your goals a lot more effectively with the help that you get from Grammarly. So you can stop making email typos on your phone, which I'm very good at. You can close more deals at work this year with your emails. You can polish your resume, maybe get that new job because you're going to come across sharper because everything's going to read better. It's just, there's a whole bunch of benefits from using Grammarly. And I think part of the, probably the best part of it is that when it's running, it's out of the way. It only appears and offers suggestions at the moment that you actually need them. So it's not a matter of like jumping into an app in order to make it happen. It's just kind of there and working for you. Go to Grammarly.com/Android and you'll get 20% off your Grammarly premium account today. And you can check out what it's like to write even better than you already did. That's Grammarly.com/Android for 20% off your Grammarly premium account. All right, it's time to get into some hardware.
Oh man, Jason, I forgot to talk during the top of the news block, my episode title idea.
What's that?
Like Huawei? More like no way.
All right. Well, you got it in there. So I was gonna say
that in the context of the show, so that we'd be like, oh, remember when Ron said Huawei? No way. That should be the episode title.
Okay.
So, there you go. Okay. I just
we'll see if
that
survives.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. I was workshopping it all day, just so you know. All right. But while we're lamenting the demise of Huawei and the mystery of the Moto Razr, we should not ignore the fact that actual phones exist in the marketplace and are being announced every day, such as the Asus Zenfone 6, which was announced. So all you Asus fanboys that have been waiting for this phone, it's got a 6.4-inch FHD plus LCD display with 83.8% screen to body ratio, no notch. It's got a Snapdragon 855 with 6 gig of RAM and 128 gig of storage, or 8 gig of RAM and 256 gig of storage. 48 megapixel standard camera and a 13 megapixel 125 degree ultra wide camera that flips from back to front of the phone. Gotta love that. Similar to the Samsung Galaxy A80. I love a wacky camera. It's the same Sony IMX586 sensor as the OnePlus 7 Pro. It does have a headphone jack and a micro SD slot. It's got the rear fingerprint sensor, USB-C, smart key assistant button that can be reassigned, 5,000 milliamp battery with 18 watt fast charge. Only USB 2.0, unfortunately. It's running Android 9 and starts at $499 with no release date yet. And Michael, you had some time with this, didn't you? You got to play with this phone. What do you think of it?
I did. I got about 20 or 15 minutes with it, thanks to Michael Josh Villanueva at Gadget Match. We were hanging out in New York.
So when's your full review? 15 minutes, full review. When is it?
yeah, it's already late, right? Should have run it.
Yes.
I think it is super impressive, and I have not been able to say that about an Asus phone in quite some time.
Yeah.
I mean, to pack in all that stuff at a projected $499 price point for U.S. pricing, and to release it here, I mean, and of course, you know, I'm a little bit biased in terms of the work I do. I use the selfie camera a lot for work, you know. And for pleasure. But, you know, being able to flip around the primary and use that as your selfie camera, and when one of those primary cameras is a wide angle, I mean, the possibilities are just wide open to you. And
that's a great innovation. I really like that, actually. I think that's because I hate the front-facing camera because I never use it. But every now and then, you know, my sister's like, send me a picture of you and the babies and like whatever. So you need to use it. But having no notch and having the camera flip up top, that's really innovative. I like that.
100%. And also, it's often overlooked with this phone, but you can steer that camera module. So you don't have to settle for like, oh, it's on the back or oh, it's on the front. You can put it at any degree setting you want between those two positions. So if you're walking down the street and using, you know, Google AR or something like that, or you're trying to get a sneak shot at a wedding where you want a candid, but you don't want people to know, like you can just move that camera module however you want. And that's awesome.
Hmm. Does it do the OnePlus 7 Pro thing where if you drop it, it goes and
retracts? I think it does, actually. I think I read that it does. Like, don't quote me on that yet.
It better, dang it, because once I realized the OnePlus 7 Pro did that, I thought every pop-out camera needs to do that because that is the coolest thing in the world.
Yep. Yeah. 100%.
I had no idea until suddenly I did, and it changed everything. Did you get the chance to play around at all with the Galaxy A80? Because I know it had kind of like a mechanism for the camera as well, front to back.
So cool. I have not played with that, but it looks amazing. I would very much like those leaks to be true about the Note 10 having that same mechanism, because I want to play with that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, Asus phones, I kind of feel like they kind of dropped a little bit off my radar because I stopped expecting goodness out of it, or you're expecting something different or whatever. And there's been a lot of excitement about this. I've read a lot of people going, oh, well, OnePlus gets out of this price range and Asus is there to sweep right in and take over, you know? So who knows?
Just when you're not looking, they wow you with some good design. I think that's a good way to grab attention. And Michael, to your point, that price point is great. I mean, we were talking earlier about the Pixel 3a I really think the mid-range lower price point, going back to the $399, $499 price range, is the way to get more people on board onto a platform. I think the $1,000 phone, people are tired of it.
100%. And also, one thing Asus also deserves credit for is eliminating the one of the things that kept me away from them for a long time was that dumb software layer they had where I could not get behind that thick manufacturer skin. And now it's just basically stock. It's stock with a couple add-ons like Motorola does, which I prefer.
Well, I was going to say, you got to wonder if they're looking at Motorola and see what they're doing with their success with the G line and seeing that it's as close to stock Android as possible. Just it works. Let people use it. Wow them on the phone design and device.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this one looks like, as everyone's saying, looks like it could be a fantastic value. It's got great price, amazing battery life, which Asus has been working on for quite a while. They've 5,000 milliampere battery.
No kidding.
Top line processor and an absolutely massive camera sensor for a front facing camera. If the Google camera mod works on here, this could be possibly the best selfie camera on the market.
Camera mod wouldn't work on here. I think it probably, I imagine it probably would.
Yeah, I think it should, in which case this could be absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
I am a little anxious about moving camera hinges. I know.
Yeah.
A long time ago, it was a big problem on the Oppo Find. Oh man, this was a long time ago.
It's like an N1, I think, right?
Yes, I think so.
Oppo Find X
was the Oppo. No, around the same time as the original OnePlus phone, like a year before then, they had a phone with a reversible camera. I think it was the N1. And I know that one was horrible for durability. So it's still. That's left a little bit of a bad taste in some people's mouths that hopefully these new phones will be more durable and we'll be able to not have those same issues. And also, I mean, there's also the concern about cases. I usually get cases on my phones. With a moving camera like that, it can be hard to find a case that will fit and good protection. So we'll have to see what comes out in that way.
I completely forgot about the Oppo N1. That was back in 2013. Oppo was ahead of the curve, man.
Oppo, 100%.
I wanted one so bad, and I'm so glad to see that idea coming back around. Because, again, like settling for a subpar selfie camera is something that almost every phone does.
Yep.
And not having to do that now, assuming these cameras are any good, which they appear to be. Michael, Josh, and I took a few selfies. They look fine. Give me a while to verify that in the real world when I get a unit. But, what a great idea, and how great to see it offered at a sub $1,000 price point. To your point, Jason. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ron. Excuse me.
That's okay. You can attribute all the wonderful points to me.
Well, listen, we're practically twins, so it makes sense.
We're wearing the same color shirt. What do you want?
Yeah, I know exactly.
Last from past here. Is that the Color OS?
Was that?
Oh yeah.
The N1. Is that the Color OS there? Like the original Color OS.
Look at
with
that.
The hardware navigation buttons.
I don't think those are hardware, are they? That looks
I think those are hardware.
That looks capacitive.
Yeah, those look like
to me.
Capacitive, but hardware.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes, not on screen. Yeah, gotcha. We've come a long way. I know. Totally. And did that rotating camera on the N1, was that a manual rotation? Like you use your finger to flip it over onto the other side? I imagine so, right? Like it didn't automatically do it.
I think
it had a motor.
It was motorized?
It did? Oh,
I believe so.
I don't know. I don't know if I ever got to.
I just remember hearing about the hinge breaking.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? And those are kind of the reports that have left me with this like legacy thinking around anything mechanical in a smartphone. The OnePlus 7 Pro is admittedly the first phone that I've actually spent an extended amount of time with that had some sort of mechanical aspect to it with a camera. And you know, I'm not using it now. I'm using the 3A, but I was pretty confident in it. I think ultimately, though, it really goes back to we own these phones for a decent amount of time. They are highly susceptible to something bad happening. Either you drop it in the sand at the beach and it gets in the hinges, or you know, you drop it on the ground and the camera's sticking out. Hopefully it pops in when you do that. So I just see those as a point of potential weakness, but they are very cool. And it's a great way to give people what they think they want, which is a bezel-less front, a bezel-less display.
Love it.
Yeah.
You know, I want that bezel-less display. But so.
I mean, when I had the OnePlus 7 Pro, that's what people ask me about all the time, is just that display. Like, oh, my God. People would stop me. They're just like, oh, what phone is that? And I'm like, this never happens with a rectangle.
Yeah.
You know, it happened with the Fold, but it never happens anymore with these things.
I got to get my hands on one of those 7 Pros, man. I've already had one person who knows I'm on the 6T going, oh, did you get the 7? I'm like, it just came out.
I literally just got the 6T. Jeez, they're still selling it.
I know.
I know I'm getting against the grain a little bit here, but I honestly personally don't fully see the benefit of the bezel-less displays. I understand that it's extremely popular and that it's the new thing and that everyone loves it right now. I personally am okay with having a cutout or having a bezel for the camera or something like that. I'm okay with that little extra couple millimeters lost of potential screen space.
I mean, going back to what we were talking about before we got into the news, the 3A has, you know, a chin. Here, let me swipe away messages. But it has a forehead and a chin. And it doesn't bother me at all. It's not something that I look at and I go, every single time I look at my phone, I go, oh my God, look at that bezel. I can't believe I'm doing this to myself. I really must hate myself because I've got a forehead and a chin on my phone. I don't think about it at all. And the same goes for my 3XL with the notch up there, although I do a good job of hiding it. But yeah, like for me, they're invisible to me in any daily use. So I think you're right to a certain degree. At the same time, I also think a bezel-less phone, when you have one and you're using it, looks pretty awesome. So, but it's not necessary. Definitely not.
I was just agreeing with somebody on Twitter who was complaining about, I think it was Ben at 95Google, was complaining about having a lot of accidental inputs when reaching across the display of the OnePlus 7 Pro because of edge detection issues, or not, excuse me, palm rejection issues.
Yep.
And I am having the same problems. Nevertheless, I am just such a form over function guy when it comes to this kind of stuff that I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. I'll live with those problems if I can have a display that just looks like that because it just makes me drool. So yeah. I get it.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on to, a topic that was once very popular in the past. Do you remember when they on Google Glass gave you the sunglasses attachment, to make it look normal?
Oh, yeah.
I found the sunglasses in my garage over the weekend. I was like, oh, I got to bring that in. These Google Glass are definitely on topic. I'm not just bringing this out so that we can remember how dorky we all looked. A new Google Glass Enterprise Edition 2 has been revealed. Oh, sorry. Oh, you want to see how dorky they are up close. There they are. See, and then the glasses, I thought this was kind of neat. You go, whoa, and you take the lens. They look kind of broken. I don't know what happened in storage. They kind of snapped a little bit. Anyways, these are not the story. Apparently, there is a new version of Google Glass. Enterprise Edition 2 is revealed with a Snapdragon XR1 chip, which is better than what was rumored, which was that it would have a Snapdragon 710. Better support for AI and computer vision for whatever Google wants to do in Glass with that. 820 milliamp hour battery up to 8 hours USB-C. For fast charging, an 8-megapixel camera up from the potato 5-megapixel camera that was on there before. Also 720p video support, but the same 640 by 360 prism display, but it will support Bluetooth 5, Wi-Fi 5, and also it. Now this, I'm not sure if this is the old or the new, but if you scroll up, they have the picture of kind of like the newish version that looks just like a regular pair of glasses. And I think that might be an option, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe that's just what they look like now. But $999 if you have to get one, Ron.
I don't have to get one.
I know you have to.
This kind of rubs me the wrong way, to be honest. not the glass itself, the chip. The Qualcomm XR1, it's a custom chip for Google Glass. It's a 10 nanometer chip that's not going to be used in anything else, really. It's just a dev platform for extended reality device, which is why it's called XR1.
Uh-huh.
And I understand that Qualcomm's really pushing hard to get into extended reality and be the top chip for there and have everyone on their platform and have everyone using their MPUs and all that type of stuff. But at the same time, it's a custom chip for an extremely limited market, and at the same time, we're being told that the best that can be done for smartwatches is 28 nanometer A7 cores. That's 2012 mid-range chips that we're seeing as the best available for smartwatches. Give me a 7 nanometer 4-core A55 chip with good Bluetooth and good all those extra MPU type stuff. You would have a smartwatch that is absolutely top of the pack right now in terms of hardware. It would be probably sell quite a few more units than this device is going to sell. Okay, it's not in extended reality, which Qualcomm is really trying hard to get into, but it still is in wearables. Yeah. It still is in technology that has potential future applications beyond what it's currently doing. It would be game-changing for any non-Samsung and non-Apple smartwatch maker. And it's complete radio silence. I know Ron was talking about the same thing, and I'm sure other people are as well. It's a bit irritating to see, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm happy you were on to share that because I was not very not very educated in the ways of the Snapdragon XR1 chip, only that it was better than Snapdragon 710 in some ways. But that's a really interesting point. I'm really curious, to be honest, how successful the Google Glass Enterprise thing is for Google. Like, what?
Yeah.
I just don't get the impression that it's a huge success, but they're continuing to iterate, so there's that. But
what I want to see is I want to see the case studies. I want to see the biotech firms or whatever manufacturing or whatever enterprise business that is utilizing these in the field and how they're using them.
How they're using them, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the only way to get a sense of that, right? Because like you can't see them anecdotally out in public like you could with Glass One or with any phone or any smartwatch. It's like these things in enterprise are like used in the lab or used in the operating theater or used wherever, and then they're put into a locker at the end of the day and you never see them out in the real world.
Yeah.
So I can't speak for Google Glass itself because I haven't seen much of that in the real world, but I am constantly getting pitched on AR devices for use in manufacturing environments to help help with inventory tracking and help with a whole bunch of other things along those lines. But they're usually tablet-based. They're not usually glasses-based. They're not usually something that the user's wearing. They're usually, hey, we'll give your employees a tablet to carry around for cheap, and they can tag things as they go along and check to make sure that the manufacturing is going along properly, or check to make sure that the tomatoes don't have something wrong with them. Just by carrying around a tablet with them. And a bunch of companies are pushing this, but I haven't seen it make that leap yet into glasses. It's going to. Google's betting that's going to, at least. And I wouldn't be surprised if it does. But I don't think they're going to be selling a lot yet. I think they're just positioning themselves to sell a lot later.
Yeah, potentially so. Because they were there early on. You got to give them credit for that. All right. Samsung was there early on with the Fold.
They were. And listen, I just can't get enough of foldable technology or leaks, apparently. But remember the Galaxy Fold and that whole debacle? I think we talked about it for like 3 weeks straight. Well, Samsung promised to make changes to the device, and those changes have now leaked. So the leaked information about the Galaxy Fold changes include that the layer that looks like the screen protector will be integrated into the body, preventing the ability to peel it back. Which you really got to wonder how that even made it.
How was that not even on the table in the first place? But anyway.
Exactly. Also, they're providing more warnings for users to leave that layer alone. I hope you don't need to use the phone around the large warning that says do not peel layer. But anyway. Also, the hinge is being fixed to prevent objects from coming in and getting lodged behind the display, which I think is a fair, in the field, they found out this was a problem and they needed to fix that. And prototypes are testing in Korea with no word on when to expect the release. But Samsung is still committed to the foldable design. They're trying to fix those problems. I don't know. We'll see if they can do. Michael, do you think the Samsung Fold is just dead in the water after that debacle, or do you think they can recover from that?
No, I think they can recover from it. I think if anything, if people have demonstrated anything, it's their ability to either forget or forgive or both. I mean, Samsung, obviously, the tired example is the Note 7. We have Boeing right now, with this 737 Max thing. Boeing already came back from a massive problem with lithium ion batteries catching on fire as part of a 777 issue or 787. I can't remember which.
Right.
Like people are, if the thing is cool enough, people will forget and they'll buy it once it's fixed. This thing is going to sell just fine.
Yeah.
As fine as it would have.
What's crazy to me is that even with these delays, it may be the first major one to hit the market. Huawei is not going to reach the Western market. Yeah. Lenovo, who knows when that's coming out. Samsung may still be first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is crazy because everyone was speculating that part of the reason it went out the door with these defects in it is because Samsung was rushing, didn't want to be beaten by Huawei or, you know, possibly Motorola. So, I mean, okay. Yeah.
Well, listen, and this is, you know, playing Monday morning quarterback. If they had just waited,
right,
Huawei wouldn't have been a problem.
Right. Yeah.
Motorola would have leaked and realized it was a fraud and they could have been said pretty.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious how close Huawei's foldable is to even, you know, even being released, even if all this, you know, other stuff wasn't happening simultaneously. Oh. Are they actually a threat, or were they actually a threat to beating Samsung to market? Now they're definitely not, but I'm not entirely convinced that they were.
I love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Bring on the foldables. All right, let's bring on our next sponsor as well, too. We're going to thank WordPress for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. And I want to know, what would you do if you could do anything? Literally, sky's the limit. You can do anything. What would you do? Well, once you answer that question, then you can build a website that can do that with WordPress.com. They've got powerful site building tools, thousands of themes, and 24/7 support from real experts. WordPress.com lets anyone pursue whatever it is they love by launching a site that's free to start with room to grow. WordPress.com was started so anyone can publish their ideas. No two-week trials, no hidden fees, and WordPress users own their own content forever, which is, as a content creator, so great to hear. You own your content. You made it. You should keep it. And just make it even better every time you work on your website. And WordPress.com is built to grow with you when you do that, to get you where you want to be tomorrow. Their customer support team is made of actual WordPress experts who are standing by to help you 24 hours a day, including weekends. The WordPress platform is so flexible and powerful that some of the biggest companies on earth use it to build their websites. And millions of people use WordPress.com every day to turn their dreams into reality. And I've not only been a WordPress user since, I want to say, since the early days. WordPress.com is such an amazing resource that I love taking advantage of, and having that access to support 24/7 and on weekends is perfect, because that's when I actually have time to work on my website on Sunday night when I'm banging my head against trying to figure out why this theme isn't working or why this plugin isn't working. They're there to help. It's all at WordPress.com. You can do it too. If I could do it, you could do it. That's the best thing I could tell you. So go to WordPress.com/allaboutandroid for 15% off any new plan purchase. That's WordPress.com/allaboutandroid for 15% off your new website. WordPress.com/allaboutandroid. And we thank WordPress for their support of this episode and making great software for people to make websites with. Thanks, WordPress.
Thank you, WordPress. And now it's time to go into the chill room with the apps segment.
The chill room.
Yeah, this is the chill room with the outdated icons.
I like it.
Never change that music.
No, why would I? It calms me. The app segment is always so high energy, and if we didn't have that to calm us down, we'd be off the walls. Minecraft Earth apparently is going to be coming out sometime-ish, like some summer possibly. I know there's a closed beta that's going to happen this summer. Anyways, sometime down the line, hopefully in the near term, and hopes to be the next big augmented reality success behind what we saw with Pokemon Go. Bill, basically within here, the idea is they kept kind of throwing shade from the different, you know, reviews that I read about how like previous AR was like fake AR. It was like, you know, camera pass through. Here's a random object that's here, but it's not tied into the location. Well, the idea here is that you could build creations of Minecraft and then place them in real locations around the world for others to arrive at and discover and interact with. So everyone that's there could see all the others in the virtual space as avatars. They can all manipulate the objects that are there, build new creations, maybe throw animals or whatever into the scene or whatever. But the idea being that these things would kind of interact with the surroundings in a way that's a little bit deeper than what we see with Pokemon Go. And I don't know, it sounds really cool. I mean, Minecraft, you know, it's kind of a big deal. So I could see this being a huge success. Android and iOS, both platforms, of course. They'd be crazy not to do that. But what do you guys think? Minecraft fans, do you think this is the right use of AR for gaming? What do you think?
I am neither devout user of AR nor a Minecraft fan. I just look forward to more innovation in this space.
Michael doesn't care. Okay, Ron, what do you say?
I think this is great. I love the possibilities of AR, and the user base of Minecraft is enormous. I mean, if anything is gonna challenge Pokemon Go, it could be Minecraft, because Pokemon Go, I feel as if there was a whole generation of phone users and stuff like that that we had to educate on AR and educate on phones and stuff like that to get them to use it. Whereas Minecraft, it's a generation that grew up on this dang game.
That's true, and
it's gonna be right out of the gate. And it's important, I feel like, whenever you mention Minecraft, to remember that Minecraft is owned by Microsoft.
Yep.
And I really got to wonder how much of this technology is leveraged from HoloLens and all the stuff in AR that they've been doing. You got to imagine there's some synergy there. So this is really, really curious.
You don't even have to imagine it. They worked really closely with the HoloLens team on this. And, they're using OpenStreetMaps for mapping data. They're using the Azure Spatial Anchors for tracking players and data. So to a certain degree, this is also a demonstration, a way of showing off kind of Microsoft's technical prowess, on something like this. And I think HoloLens is a big, big part of that. Steven, are you excited? Are you the Minecraft player in our group? I don't play Minecraft, but
unfortunately, I'm not the target demographic either. at the same time, I think, as people are saying, I think the difference in demographics may actually help them, especially since as time has progressed, hopefully they'll be able to do the whole scaling up to meet the demands a little bit better. Azure does a great job with scalability, and I think Microsoft, if they're actually putting their weight behind this, could properly handle the demand of Minecraft at the level that it would presumably have from its target market. I am curious what they're going to do with if it gets overcrowded, though. Do you think they're going to do multiple worlds like you can see in Minecraft?
That's
all assuming it's a massive success. But if it gets to that point, I'd be interested to see that happen.
Yeah, like that, what happens over time? Do things decay and drop away to make room for other things?
Ooh, that's cool. That's a good idea, though. And you'll see that in the more populated metro areas, like Seattle and New York and the Bay Area and stuff like that. But if you're playing this game in Wisconsin, I bet you there's a chance that you could Minecraft your whole town and no one else would, can take ownership of it. It works in both directions. But I like the idea of a decaying aspect and someone's got to come in and rebuild it. That's really cool. That's a great idea.
You're welcome, right, Microsoft. That's a freebie.
Well, in a completely different direction, a very anticipated browser is hitting the market finally. Tor, the official Tor browser for Android, is now released in the Play Store. The alpha version was released eight months ago for public testing, where I believe we talked about it on the show, Jason.
Yeah, I believe we did.
Yeah, and it's based on Firefox version 60 or Firefox V60. It's the first fully integrated package. And before this, you needed Orbot to connect. Now that's part of the browser. And that's what we talked about when the alpha rolled out, that you needed Orbot and you needed to, kind of establish that tunnel and then use the Tor browser. Now it's all integrated into one. And so if you want to protect your, privacy and what you're searching for, Tor browser is, a favorite of everyone. So now it's available on Android is pretty cool. Yeah. So there you go.
With that intro, I thought you were going to talk about the Internet Explorer refresh. The Internet Explorer rewrite. Edge, also known as Edge Chromium.
Wow. There you go.
So this is good news for anyone who surfs the Tor browser. I don't know if I've ever been on the Onion network. Like, I just know that it's slow.
Yeah.
I know that it's slow and for good reason, but that's about all I know about it. So, so there you go. First official version. We probably stole that from someone's pick from the arena if they wanted to check it out. They could still use it. We have an email from Dominic from Poland who says, my first question. So it has two questions. My first question: during Google I/O, they were talking about settings that will allow us to delete some information after 3 or 18 months. Will this be available on phones with Android Q or on previous versions also, or maybe even on desktop computers? And the answer there is that this, from what I understand, has nothing to do with Android specifically. This is kind of Google accounts as a whole. This would be done through your Google settings. This is not Android specific. But a second question is, what kind of information will be deleted if I choose to remove them after 3 months? Will this be my search history, locations, or something else? And the answer there is, right now, I think once it launches, and I think it's coming soon, like within the next coming weeks, you'll have these controls. At launch, it's going to allow you to do this with location history, with web activity, and with app activity. And that's to begin with. There is the possibility for more data points to be controlled in this method down the line. But I think it's a good move for Google to give, you know, more access to kind of automated data trimming, or whatever they want to call it. I don't know how many people are going to know about it and turn it on, but, you know, maybe holding on to our data for the utility that we get out of Google services, maybe 3 months is enough. And then it's kind of the best of both worlds, right? We're not keeping our entire digital lives necessarily in their hands that we know of. we're getting rid of some of it, but still that allows for certain things to be tailored and personalized, you know, within 3 months or 18 months. I don't know. That seems like a reasonable balance to me. More option is better when it comes to security, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. It's certainly definitely good to see this, to them taking steps to give people options to remove the data from their profile. But as I mentioned on the IO panel, I'm not sure what they mean by delete. They haven't been very explicit about this. Are they saying deleted as in the data is completely gone, which I doubt, or deleted as in it's no longer tied to your profile, or something else entirely?
Yeah.
I would like to see a little more clarification on that, and I have a feeling it's not going to be what people may be assuming it is, but it may not be bad either. It may be just be somewhere in between.
Yeah, that makes me wonder, when a company says, we'll delete your data, we'll delete your information if you request it, are they legally bound to that claim? You know what I mean? Like, if they say, you know, you request to delete it, sure, we'll delete it. In my head, I just think, yeah, right. Like, they're going to get rid of this valuable data, but maybe they're legally bound to, if they offer it and a customer says, yes, please delete it. Or maybe they have in their terms of service or whatever, in very, very small written, you know, portion that actually details what's actually happening to it and is deleted from your view versus actually deleted from all of their systems. You know, I'm not really quite sure. I'm pessimistic in this regard.
Well, no, based on what I was getting into, though, for most people's purposes, deleting any link to your account is enough for most people. It may not, it's not what people may be thinking of when they hear deleting the data.
Yeah.
But for a lot of scenarios, that actually would be enough. Because if it's truly deleting any link to you, then there's no link to you. It's not, in theory at least.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, anonymization can be tricky to do properly at times. But there could be a happy middle ground that they've found. And I would like, as I said, I'd like to see more about what they're actually doing and what their plans are and how they're handling the data and all that other fun stuff.
Yeah. Set our mind at ease, Google. This one time.
Please.
Please. All right, let's take a break, thank the sponsor, and then we're going to get into the arena and show you four apps that you're going to install, all of them, and you're going to thank us because they're all awesome. And you won't know what to vote for, so you'll vote for all of us, and we'll all win. See? We'll all get a prize. But this episode of All About Android is brought to you by The IntraZone. It's a podcast from Microsoft. The IntraZone is your biweekly conversation and interview podcast about SharePoint, OneDrive, and related technology within Microsoft 365. So you can get the most out of SharePoint, learn how it works for you. And each episode covers important topics and information about Microsoft SharePoint, a number of different facets, including news and announcements, a focused topic of the week, also guest perspectives from various experts, users, partners, and customers. There's also a partner highlight where they'll feature a partner from the strong ecosystem, frequently asked questions roundtable, upcoming events, conferences, and workshops. You're going to learn how to more easily share and manage content and empower teamwork throughout your organization with the technology that you already have. And be sure to catch this week's special episode live from SharePoint's conference in Las Vegas. You're going to hear from Jeff Tepper. It's Microsoft's VP for Office 365, OneDrive, and SharePoint. There will be announcements for what's rolling out in 2019, a live panel discussion on the evolution of SharePoint in organization use, and a whole lot more. So be sure to check out their latest episodes. You can go to aka.ms/theintrazone. And subscribe to The IntraZone wherever you listen to your podcasts. You'll find them all across the board. Subscribe to The IntraZone today. That's The IntraZone. The IntraZone. And we thank The IntraZone and Microsoft for their support of All About Android. And now it's time. Boom, boom, boom. For the arena. Psh.
So many enter, but only one lives. Arena.
Last week's episode was episode 420, bro. If you went to twitch.to/AAApoll420 and placed your vote, many of you did, and it looks like AI Cut. Wow, that was Flo's app. Yeah. AI Cut wins 37%. Do it later. Text message automation. That was yours, Ron. Second place.
It was.
Almost 30, well, 0.01% shy of 34%. Mine was Mupin 64 plus FZ, the Nintendo 64 emulator. That was around 15.5%. And then Zombies Run was our guest submission by Adrian. And that came in last place at almost 13%.
So the surprising results lead to drama in the standings, let me tell you. Flo might not be here, but her lead, her first place lead, is now 60 points.
She is rocking it this year.
Yeah. She just comes and goes as she pleases, and when she comes, she wins. Yeah, so there you go. The guests are in second place, the defending champions. The guests are in second place with 49 points. And Jason, guess what?
What?
We got a little tie on our hands for third place. You and I are all tied up at 39 points. So while Flo is nearly double our point total, I've climbed out of the basement, and I'm looking to pass you, Jason.
Dang, so, man.
Yeah. So since we're doubling up on guests today, do we get to do a little team battle instead of the usual free-for-all?
Well, that's a good question. How does that work?
We figured this out. I forget that when there were two guests, there was some adjustment of points or something like that. Maybe not. Or it just doesn't matter. Flo's winning. That's all we need. That's all.
I'm not sure how it's gonna go, but if both guests win, let's just say that's really good for team guests.
Someone figured it out.
Yeah, exactly. And we appreciate those that figure it out. I think maybe Wayne County figures that out. Anyways, okay.
So Jason, I think since we start with the loser of the hosts, you go, even though you didn't lose, you go first.
Yeah, I go first, and you'll go last. Okay. All right, so mine's a pretty quick one. It's also a pretty low install. I think it's pronounced Sphera, S-P-H-A-E-R-A. And this is a wallpaper app, but it's based around maps. And I like what it comes up with. So we'll go ahead and go here. I'll go ahead and search location. Let's do a search for, I don't know, just pick a place at random, Petaluma, California, and we'll go ahead and search. It takes me to that place, that random fictitious place on a map. And there you go. What do you know? That's Petaluma. But it does this cool kind of like layering or like stylizing of it. And you have all these different presets that you can kind of go down. I mean, you've got your normal one, which is kind of like the satellite view and everything that you might get through Google Maps. But it has all of these other – here, let me turn down the brightness. Let me turn down the brightness a little. I don't know if that shows it off any better. Yeah, whatever. It has all of these different ways to stylize what you're looking at here. I'll just go jump to a different location here. There we go. We got a lot going on there. And, you know, you've got the things that look pretty normal for your wallpaper, but you can also kind of like, you know, there are presets that will include kind of street names and location. We're looking at Prague right now. There are some of them that, you know, are just more like cool color combinations, no text, kind of look almost neon and really pop out and everything. And I kind of like the way that it works. You just find a location that you really like the look of, and you can save it to your device. and then you can set that as your wallpaper. And it's just kind of a cool way to really create your own wallpapers on the fly based on geographic location. And like I said, there are a number of different locations here. Now we're going to jump to some random place. Is this the Apple spaceship? Is that what that is?
It looks like it.
Yeah. Whoa, it's like two different maps, though. When I zoom out, you see the old, and now you see the new.
Oh, you're just seeing through the cloaking field. That's all it is.
Oh, I see. Oh, wow. Yeah. This is a really powerful app. Sphera. More powerful than even I imagined. Anyways, it's really cool. Cool way to go about it. You can see all the street names on this one. And go ahead and zoom out and see a little bit more. And if you are a locations fan, then you will love Sphera for your backgrounds and your wallpapers. Sphaera. It is 99 cents. Like I said, low installs on this one. I think 500 plus. So, you know, you'd be doing the developer a solid by installing Sphera on your phone. And great work on the development of the app. All right, that is that. Steven, why don't we go with yours next?
Sure thing.
And I've got it to show off.
Yep, so I'm bringing back an old favorite. I'm bringing Hangar to the arena. It's a app that has previously won. However, within the last couple of weeks, it received a complete rewrite. So it is now completely written in Flutter and Kotlin. And the developer actually gave a great talk on the whole process of the rewrite and the history of it just a couple of days ago at GDG Toronto Android, which is available on YouTube if someone wants to go check it out. And so this is a completely open source app. It's FOSS. It's GPL v3 licensed. It's available for anyone to contribute to it. And what it does is it brings power toggles essentially to any device. It's so if you pull down the notification bar panel, it'll
Because I've got do not disturb on, right? Because I do the show. So give me a second, make sure that I got nothing. No. It's all good. I
have it on mine.
There we go.
So it gives you a quick access to whatever apps you want. You can pin apps there. You can set it up so that it just automatically picks based on what your recent apps are. You can set up to weight it based on which apps you are most frequently go into. It's incredibly customizable. There's tons of stats in there for which apps you're using so that you can quickly see how much time you're actually spending in apps. It's extremely smooth. It looks nice. And it unfortunately is not yet available in the new form on the Play Store. This is still the update to Flutter and Kotlin is still a beta. So the Play Store has the old version with pre-Flutter and pre-Kotlin. If you want to test out the new version, you have to go to GitHub and download it directly and sideload it, but it will be on the Play Store very soon.
Yeah, it looks really nice. And I'm trying to remember, because this was, what was the episode? It was back in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, is when.
Yeah, I mean, this app was actually, yeah, so it was developed by, I actually don't know the initial launch date, but it's been on the market for a long time. It's got 100,000 downloads, 4.2 stars. It's been around for quite a while. It's been one of the best ways of having cross-platform. First released on the Play Store in 2014.
Yep.
One of the best ways of having cross power toggles essentially on any device you want. The ability to quickly get into the app of your choice and access it from anywhere, really.
Love it. It's really nicely designed. For the user, I'm curious from your perspective. So you said Flutter and Kotlin redesign, essentially. For the user, are they going to notice a difference? Or is this, like, is it going to operate faster? Is it more, like...
Exactly. So it's, unfortunately, it is a little bit larger as a result of using Flutter and modern app architecture components and all that stuff. But it runs incredibly smoothly. It gives you, the redesign gives the access to a bunch of new statistics, and there's some additional functionality that the developer is currently working on that hasn't quite launched yet, and it's a really nice tool.
Yeah, love it.
And really customizable too.
Awesome. And I imagine this new version of Hangar is going to hit the Play Store at some point. It hasn't yet. So if you want to get it right now, you can find it on GitHub. You can find it. Look for Mimic Mobile. And you can find the new Hangar version there on GitHub. Cool. Love it. Yeah, Hangar's a great app, and it was good to see it again. I think, you know, we're kind of toying around with this, like, we've been doing this for so long. Sometimes apps reemerge in the arena, and we're like, what are the requirements in bringing an app back? And really, I think what Ron and I have determined is, you know, amount of time, yes, is one aspect of it, but also has it changed significantly enough to bring back in? And I think this absolutely qualifies. So Hangar is what you should look for. And look out for the update soon in the Play Store.
As I mentioned, if you're interested in learning a little bit about the history of Hangar and the actual development process itself, check out the talk on GDG Toronto Android YouTube channel. It's a fantastic little talk that goes into the whole history of power toggles and how the process of moving it from traditional Android codebase to Kotlin and Flutter, how the whole thing went through, and the difficulties of doing split Kotlin Flutter coding and a bunch of other fun stuff for developers.
Awesome. Check that out. All right. Michael, I have your app installed, so tell us about it.
Fantastic. As always, y'all have outdone me. But I rather like this one a lot. This is called Abstract. And it is, you know, at first glance, just appears to be one of innumerable wallpaper apps you can find in the store. But I found that out through Alex Doby, my colleague at Android Central, that this is actually an app full of wallpapers, all from one artist. That artist, multidisciplinary design director and illustrator Hampus Olsen, who has been making wallpapers for OnePlus phones since the OnePlus 2. We talked about OnePlus at the top of the show, obviously, but these wallpapers have been great for just years and years. So regardless of what Android phone you have, you can just download this app, grab any of those wallpapers that he's made for OnePlus. He's also worked on so many things. He's worked for the wallpapers for Paranoid Android, for a lot of the, I think some of the Oxygen OS stuff. I don't know. His resume is just exceedingly long. And once you've, you know, settle on a look that you like, if you want to go pro, I think it costs like 99 cents or something like that. You just hit set wallpaper. It sets it to your home screen or lock screen. Boom. Works just like backdrops or like wall rocks. But in this case, it's all from the same artist. It all has a fairly, I mean, they're not all minimal, but they're comparatively minimal compared to a lot of other ones you'll find out there. They don't really get in the way of what you're trying to do on the device. And, you know, they give it the vibe that you would have had to buy a OnePlus phone to achieve. So, Abstract from Hampus Olsen.
Abstract. Not a lot of people
do. Yeah, there you go.
I love it.
Yeah, those Paranoid Android wallpapers are quite nice to see. They always had fantastic designs. It's it would be quite interesting to get those on some other devices.
Yeah, right? I was surprised that you know, that this kind of curation was at play here. Good for him.
This artist really knows his style.
Indeed. Yeah. Very consistent.
Very consistent. I mean, but super, super interesting. It's like, I want to know the formula. I wonder, what is the formula? Right. What is your approach? Yeah. What's your angle here? Because
actually, you know, his site talks a lot about it. If you tap on that thing in the upper right there, that kind of that icon, you get a little bit of background on him. Then you can go to his site and just kind of learn all about his history and art and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool. You know, you don't really have that kind of relationship with a Google image search that you just typed in, you know, Star Trek Beyond wallpaper and downloaded it and applied it. You know,
I'm going to see if I can get him on the show. That would be an interesting.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I'd love to hear from him.
I'm behind that.
Yeah.
Totally.
That'd be cool.
If you're watching or listening, I'll figure out some way to reach you. I think the App Store probably has his email address.
There's going to be a contact. Yeah.
He's got an About Us. Contact us on his website. Yeah.
Right on. Great.
Unless he's some sort of recluse that only comes out via wallpaper art.
Right. Maybe he's AI. Right.
Yeah. No, I actually know some of the paranoid devs. I'll reach out.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
All right. Well, that's less. I mean, that's awesome, but that's less interesting. It's more interesting if he's like some J.D. Salinger type, you know, like, yeah, right. But cool. Thank you, Stephen. Please reach out to him.
He releases a custom wallpaper that just says, no, thank you.
That's great.
And you know what? That would be my wallpaper going forward for the rest of my life. That would be an honor, to be honest. All right, cool. That's amazing. Great app. That is Abstract. All right, Ron, you've got floor.
Yeah, so love a pretty app, love a functional app, and I know the audience does love an app that lets you lift the hood of your phone, and that's basically what Skit does. Skit is a new applications manager for your device that basically allows you to look at all of the apps that you use as well as the system functions that you use and just tap on any one of them, Jason. And what you can do is you can go into it and you can see all the details about that app, what version it is, where it's stored, what all this sort of stuff, where the directories it's stored in, how much memory it takes. If you scroll back up a little, you can take a look at the permissions. You can take a look at the activities and services it uses. This is complete, full analysis of every app on your device and exactly how it works and interacts with your phone. And then the piece de resistance, as it were, if you tap the action button in the lower – you don't have the action button lower right-hand corner. Or do I not see it?
Oh, there it is.
There it is. Hit that. You can either open the app or you can extract the APK to send to somebody. So if you ever wanted to reverse pull the APK out – you know, if you want to get your hands on a application from the Google Play Store or from some other source and share it with a friend or do an APK tear down yourself or dive into the code, this is how you can do it, which is pretty interesting. Yeah. So, yeah. And then so that's all the app level information. But then if you back out to the main screen and go to system.
Or
analytics. Go up top. I'm sorry. Up top.
Oh, system. Oh, sorry. Yeah, system. I didn't see that. Got it.
And this is where you can analyze all the services that are going on and within Android, your Android library. So let's say you scroll back up there. If you really wanted to dive into the calendar. No, if you really wanted to dive into AR Core, if you scroll up a little or down, I saw it go by. There it is. There's AR Core. And you can see exactly what permissions, how it works, what activities and what services it uses. And you could also extract the APK for AR Core, which is crazy. Wow. So there it is. So if you want full access and information about your apps and an application manager, Skit not only does it, but does it very, very elegantly. And then Jason, actually, if you back out to the main screen, you started looking at the icons down at the bottom. But yeah, you can get some analytics, some information about your phone, exactly, you know, all the different applications that are on there and how much memory they're taking and all that sort of stuff. And then on the other tab, there's just kind of everything else that you want. You can support your devs and get the premium version, which has additional support like for theming and stuff like that to get a little fancier with Skit. It's only $249, so support your devs. But yeah, Skit lets you go completely under the hood of your apps and get access to them. So there it is.
Nice. That is a great pick.
Yeah.
Cool.
And yes, you can, by the way, to answer the question in the chat room, you can use Skit to remove apps and remove things. Although be careful, please. don't accidentally remove the a key system.
Yeah, I wonder if it would do that.
What's interesting, I'm looking at Skit on mine on the systems tab, and the fourth one down is the Android Easter egg.
Oh.
I don't know if you have that.
I don't have that.
Oh, well, I can extract the APK and send it to you.
Yeah, would you send me the Easter egg? That would be great.
So you can remove it. You can remove an app. So if you look at an app and hit the action button, you can open it, you can extract it, you can find it in Google Play, or you can delete it. So please be careful.
Be careful. Awesome. That is Skit. Cool. So four great apps this week. We've got Sphera, Hanger, Abstract. I always want to say Abstract, but that's the point. Abstract and Skit. Go to twit.to/AAApoll421, and you can vote for your favorite app this week. Choose from any one of those four. If you could choose all four, we would let you, but alas, you have to pick.
As Victor is
picking right now, and he cannot pick. He is confused on what is the best one, because they're all amazing. He chooses Skit.
Thank you, Victor, for your vote.
I think.
It also helps that you got to pick an answer first, Victor. We got clarification from Wake County in the chat room that if one of the guests win – I'm sorry. I don't even remember what he said. We figured it out.
Uh-oh. Did he put in a –
whichever guest something has happens. Whichever guest has the highest placing, that's the points that they get. That's what it was. Yeah. So Wade says whichever guest finishes highest gets the points.
Oh, okay. All right. I think I understand. Okay. There we go. twit.to/AAA poll 421. This is why other people do the point stuff, because if it was me, I would be confused and it would never happen, because in the end, I'd be like, I don't get it. I'm broken. Smoke would start pouring out of my ears. That would be the way that goes. We have reached the end. We made it. We made it through all the Huawei stuff and a whole lot more, and we could not have done it without our awesome guests. Steven Zimmerman, xda-developers.com. Steven, it's always great to get you on the show. Thank you so much for hopping on tonight.
Always good to be here.
Right on. What do you want people to know? I mean, obviously, your latest work, it posted within hours of the show, so you might not even know what you're working on next, but what do you want to leave people with?
I actually have a follow-up to that article that I may post in there, too. I have to do a little more research before I can go ahead with it, because I have to get some clarification on a certain legal matter for it. Mm-hmm. Same vein as the current one. But, just follow me on Twitter. You'll see all of the new articles. My Twitter is SZIM92, as in Steven Zimmerman. So SZIM92.
Right on. Steven, thank you again. Really appreciate it. Keep up the great work at XDA. Definitely always reading what you guys are doing over there. So we appreciate your time. Thank you. And then, of course, Michael, do you prefer to be called Michael or the Mr. Mobile or just Mr. Mobile? The V is always kind of weird to say when you're talking
to
someone.
Right, the V is implied, right? Yeah, it depends on how well we know each other.
Okay.
No.
Michael, no, it's great having you on.
It's always great to be here. I'm sorry, I've been coughing up a lung. These allergies are killing me over here.
Oh, I hear you.
I'm at the Mr. Mobile, TheMrMobile, pretty much everywhere, most notably on YouTube. And I just love hanging out with you guys, especially on a night where I can actually talk about some of the stuff that's been going on. Thank you for having me on such an eventful week. Boy,
absolutely,
what a crazy time. And I have to recommend that people go check out that Steven's piece at XDA, because that was really interesting reading right before we went on the air here, that Huawei piece. So
yeah, it was a different angle. Like I saw a lot of articles, and Steven, you definitely came at it from a different perspective with kind of a deep knowledge of AOSP and everything. So people should absolutely read that.
100%.
xda-developers.com for that. youtube.com/TheMrMobile for Michael's work on YouTube. Got any hardware that you're working on right now?
What am I doing? Well, I've got to do that 3A review at some point. I'm trying to chase down that Zenfone 6, and I'm working on a plan to maybe see what 5G looks like now that apparently, you know, it works on more than a street corner. So
yeah.
Stay tuned for that.
We had a story in the rundown, and we had to get rid of it because we were going a little long. But it was I would definitely recommend people check out CNET's Jessica Dolcourt did kind of a 5G review where she went to Chicago and used the Samsung Galaxy S10 5G. And it was an interesting kind of insight into what we can expect from 5G. The speeds were super fast at times, but at other times, even when she was in line of sight of the tower, it would still just be pretty slow. And it just kind of really made me realize like how fickle 5G is at this point, and we got a long ways to go. Yeah. So
look at all the 5G ads on that page, though.
What's that?
The page you were just on. Look at all the 5G ads there. Man,
yeah. No kidding. This is what 5G is all about right now. All of the supporting advertising.
Yeah. Right. It's like when I ran that DJI camera review recently, where the DJI finally built a GoPro competitor, and within a half hour of running it, viewers were hitting me up on Twitter to tell me that, hey, I can't watch your video without first sitting through a giant GoPro ad. And I'm like, oh, well, that doesn't surprise me one bit. Yeah.
Not at all. That's called targeted advertising.
That's exactly right.
That's how we live. Anyways, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Steven. Really appreciate it. Ron, thank you as well.
My pleasure. Always good to be here. And I'm very happy to have something to plug that this week was one of the major TV show series finales with Game of Thrones. So we got back behind the mic, and Finale Podcast is back after a couple of months hiatus of taking a break to figure out how to have babies. Well, we figured out how to have babies, to figure out how to care for babies. Carrie and I are back. Carrie has never seen Game of Thrones, and we watched the series finale.
Amazing!
And she tried to make sense of it. So go to finalepodcast.com. You can subscribe to it wherever you listen to podcasts, on Pocket Casts, and listen to our fun discussion of Game of Thrones. And it's good stuff. So go there.
Good timing, man. Everybody's talking about that finale.
I might not be great at the podcasting, but I do know how to market the podcast.
Yeah, you know how to pick the time. Real quick before I leave, I just want to ask you, Ron. Well, actually, you all probably saw this. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Did you guys see the trailer? Are you excited? I'm excited.
Very excited.
Quentin Tarantino's ninth film? I don't know.
Oh, no, I'm waiting for him to make a Star Trek film. I'll come out for that.
Okay. We'll see if that happens.
Yeah.
All right. Victor, thank you, sir. Appreciate your help tonight and always.
No problem, man. It was fun.
It was fun. You can find me on Twitter. I'm here. This is what I do. So, or find me on Twitter at Jason Howell. I'm not posting as much these days. I'm sorry, but I'm doing my best. We do have a survey here that we would appreciate your input on if you have a few minutes. It focuses on how you use collaborative software at work. It's very short. It takes about 6 minutes of your time. If you go to twit.to/survey14 and let us know what you think, we would really appreciate it. Thank you if you hop through there, that's it right there. It's a pretty straightforward survey. So twit.to/survey14. That is it for this week. Leave us a voicemail at 347-SHOW-AAA. Send us emails at AAA@twit.tv. Find us on Twitter at Android Show. You can find our Arena apps list. Every app that we've had in the Arena to date, I think it's up to date or close-ish anyways. Thanks to the folks who maintain it. twit.to/AndroidApps. Find show notes and past episodes at twit.tv/AAA. There you're going to find everything that you need to know. The fact that we record every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The fact that we have a ton of episodes, 421 of them to be exact, and all of them are listed there. And if you want to start at the beginning, you absolutely can. The fact that we have subscribe links for audio and video podcasts of all different quality types. Everything is there. Just twit.tv/AAA. I've given you too much information. What you do with it is up to you. And that is it for this week. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.